Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
On November 23rd of last year, the Clark Art Institute opened Monet Kelly, the first exhibition to consider the influence of Impressionist painter Claude Monet on the works of leading contemporary American artist Ellsworth Kelly. The works in the exhibition were selected by Kelly and include two paintings and 18 unpublished drawings by the artist, together with nine paintings by Monet.
The exhibition examines how both Monet's motifs and the sites that inspired his paintings have shaped Kelly's approach to his work. I should say that Kelly is a great hero, local hero around here. Monet Kelly will be on view through February 15th, 2015.
Here to tell us more, we welcome David Breslin, Associate Director of the Research and Academic Programs and Associate Curator of Contemporary Projects at the Clark Art Institute. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Wonderful to have you here. And we also have a acclaimed contemporary painter Stephen Hanek, who is here and, to be completely honest, was doing a program in the gallery of the Monet Kelly exhibit just a moment ago, and we just said, hey, do you want to be on the radio? Come and join us because we're buds and we like talking to him. So he said yes, and here he is. So it's wonderful to have you here, like a surprise drop-in. I like it.
Oh, thanks, Joe. My pleasure.
A great pleasure to have you here. So, David, let us begin with you of how this exhibit came to be, and because I assume Kelly comes first, or does Monet come first? How does that work?
Kelly comes first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good work. Good answer.
He's the inspiration. He's truly the curator behind this. And as Alan said, as a neighbor, as a friend, as one of the most esteemed artists working today, to have him do something in our new galleries was something that was on the radar of the Clark and for a long time. And so he came up with this idea, which is actually two exhibitions in one. One is his relationship to Monet's studio in Giverny when he saw the paintings, the water lilies that so many of us know so well. And the other is his retracing the steps of Monet visiting the Isle of Belleisle, where Monet painted in the mid-1880s. So it's really two stories at one time, how Kelly saw the form of abstraction that Monet was working in, and that became a route for him to think about what his painting could be, but then also how a younger artist uses the footsteps of an older artist, one that he didn't know, to try to rethink what that practice could mean for him in his time.
You know, you said curator, and that's fascinating. I think a lot of people out here don't know how much power the curator actually has, which is huge. I mean, you're still a very young man. I mean, what are you, 35 or so?
Exactly.
I knew that.
Good guess.
And this, if politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, which you have said too many times on the radio, then the curator makes those decisions. And so you have a lot of power. Do you know that?
I know that. And I think that what's the interesting thing about this exhibition is doing what I think museums can do and have been doing, which is ceding some of that power to the makers. And by asking Kelly to come in and think about what type of show and what kind of historical narrative could frame the type of thing that he has been doing is a way to think about not just how someone anonymous, might be David Breslin, frames an exhibition, but how the maker, how Kelly really thinks about his work and how he would like to see that in reference with historical fathers.
So could we call you a benign, curator? Or
I'll take that.
A mean curator.
He'll take benign. So once you have Kelly and saying, all right, this is what I'd like to do, then you have to get the Monet, right? I mean, that has...
Yeah, exactly.
So what goes into that?
What goes in with that is a lot of talking to the artist.
Because I assume you want their specific pieces.
Their specific
very
ones.
Very specific pieces.
Their specific periods that he wants to pick up. He wants to have a few of the works from the 1880s when Monet is painting in Belleisle. But you also want to have some of the paintings from Giverny, where he had his studio from the late 1880s that he built in 1917, and to have some of those less known but still famous paintings of the master. And luckily, a number of those paintings are in the collection of the Marmottan in Paris, and those were given directly to the government of France, and we were lucky to be able to borrow some of those paintings directly from them. But yes, it's a lot of kind of scavenging.
Do you have to pay?
You have to insure. You have to ship.
Yeah.
And you have to be a good colleague to those institutions in the future.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's diplomacy that goes into a lot of it. Yeah.
What I find fascinating, and Stephen, maybe you can speak to this as well, because you mentioned it's really two exhibits in one, but it's almost three, really, because you have Monet, and then you have Kelly, but then in the center of it, it's where it all comes together of where to depending on where you're sitting, to the right you have Monet, and to the left it's Kelly, and you see this stark contrast, and yet it's beautiful. What does it take to set up a moment like that? I guess I'll ask you, David, and then Stephen can talk because he just came from speaking from there about that very thing.
Yeah, and I miss Stephen, so I'd love to hear what he has to say more than anything else. But part of what we wanted to do and what Ellsworth wanted to do was to give each space to each person. I mean, frequently you have exhibitions set up where you have, here's the Kelly, here's the Monet, or X artist, Y artist, and just do a compare contrast. So in this way, by having two separate galleries where you're able to look at the work of each individual artist in this concentrated, contained way, you get a sense of each before you start comparing and contrasting. And then there's this center space where we do kind of put the two in a head-to-head. You have the Tableau Vert painting, which is the painting that Kelly made in 1952, the day after he made his journey to Giverny to see the studio where Monet worked. So it was one of these kind of eureka moments for Kelly. How has this guy that we know from painting the Haystacks or the Parliament in London, how did he go towards abstraction? How did he go towards these things, or he was working on things that you could barely recognize? And so in that way, we were able to make this head-to-head where you could turn to your left and see this, what Kelly calls his first monochrome painting, or first painting that's only one color. But what's odd is that it's actually two colors.
Yeah, so many colors. Yeah, it's a lot of.
And then you turn to your right, and you see this great painting of the Japanese bridge that's at the gardens in Giverny that Monet painted. But I'm interested, Stephen, how you think about what Kelly was able to do with his exhibition.
First of all, let me say how pleased I am that you revealed that in fact you had to go to Paris and track these other paintings down and stuff, because I think one of the things that you really overlook in this show is how difficult it is to curate these shows that can come off so simply. What you do when you walk into these huge galleries, I mean, Joe walked around and almost disappeared, you know, and so that gives you an idea.
Gives you an idea of just
how big this place is.
For those of you who don't know, Joe is very tall.
But you got to see these little glimpses in these artists' lives that were just suggested. And it's that type of glimpse into the everyday activity that goes on with the making of art that is so tough to capture and requires so much work. So to see it come off this way is really a treat. No doubt, I didn't get a chance to talk to Ellsworth the night of the opening. He was totally mobbed, but he's a great guy, and he must be thrilled with the way this show comes off. Mm-hmm. The juxtaposition of those drawings, the way they go from the late 40s to the 60s to 2000, you can see him drift further into the celebration of the individual shapes.
Yes.
From the beginning, where just the line indicated some incredible detail in the landscape with just the way that he leaned on the pencil doing those lines on the back of architectural books. I mean, that's a whole other story and stuff.
But so we know that Kelly is a great hero in the country and in the world and in our but particularly in our area. But dish on Monet a little bit. I mean, what is it that other than the painting, the beauty of the painting, what is it that we'll know about with him? And what's he famous for personally?
Well, David knows much more in-depth information on Monet than I do. But what I respond to is, particularly in his later years, which is the art that we have celebrated upstairs here, it is fundamentally a tapestry. You're looking at an artist whose eyesight is fading, and he is painting. He's living in a essentially a small park that's got ponds, it's got foliage everywhere, it's got bridges, and they all radiate colors. And these are all weaving in and out of each other by themselves. And he goes in there to appreciate that. And one of my favorite pieces upstairs is the one of the bridge where you don't know where the water ends and the sky begins, you know, and it's just all, it literally is a tapestry that he would be, go up there and add paint. One day he would see ochre in a given place, and the next day at a different time he would see a Kelly green, and he just put that right
on
top.
Is this because of the failing eyesight, or is it because of his talent?
I think the failing eyesight gave him the courage to not care.
So he was sort of to art what deafness was to Beethoven.
Wow, I can't get into that.
That's good.
but certainly the visual distortion that Van Gogh was experiencing that we don't know much about, but I think that's more analogous. And clearly what he came up with was brilliant and it pushed artists ever since.
Do you find, thinking of it as an artist yourself, do you think of that as stages of your career, that there's a maturation of the artist of how you say, okay, this is what it's going to be, but as I naturally age and as my talent and my experience increases, then there will be a change of my work as well?
I think it's inevitable that you have to appreciate that, but I think at the moment of painting, we don't want to think about it.
No.
You know, just, you know, want to get
it's that a reflection piece of done. Where you are at that moment.
Right. But I think one of the things that we enjoy as painters that other professions don't get the opportunity to appreciate is that we get to spend time with people from different times in history, you know, time tripping. I love the way Kurt Vonnegut handled it with Slaughterhouse-Five, where he literally had a family that was way off, a separate family way off in the future. And you can go and you spend time with these people and you understand why they were doing things in a certain way. Lane Fazin, the great, you know, one of my best friends on the planet, who is the longtime revered professor here at Williams College, always used to tell me that, you know, don't forget, all art is contemporary art. It's a matter of appreciating what was going on in human history at the time that connects the dots for you.
Can I ask about technique? From my very unsophisticated point of view, it's always been great to see people who do wild things. And then inevitably somebody tells you, yes, but first they have to learn how to be great classical painters, and then they can do the wild things. They don't start out with the wild stuff. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it varies from artist to artist. You know, don't you think, David?
I think what's interesting about Ellsworth Kelly is that he goes to Paris in 1948 on the GI Bill. He's trying to figure out what kind of artist he wants to be. And he has a lot of things that are, you know, the fraught weight of what has happened after World War II. How is an artist supposed to make stuff after all these terrible things have happened? But also what was going on back at home with the American painters, the action painters, the ones that were featured in the Clark's exhibition during the summer, really that you can make some kind of index of yourself, that what I put on the canvas is a reflection of my personality. And Ellsworth Kelly wanted to get away from that. He wanted to think about, how can I be an artist without this, everything having to do without this romantic idea of what an artist is? And so the idea of stripping away certain choices about, you know, and to the point of this exhibition, not picking to go to Belle Isle because it was this beautiful place, which it is, or because there are these great land formations that he could draw, which there were, but because there was somebody who went before him, that he could almost strip out kind of the emotional weight of picking a subject, but really see that through someone else's eye, and also kind of take away that history to help us see anew a place that we think we know. And I think that's a great lesson when looking at abstraction in general, is that it really makes us look, hopefully when we leave the exhibition, at the landscape, at the architecture, as something that we can see anew and not as necessarily something that we're told how to see.
There's a really good searching that is evident from this particular exhibition. And what I mean by that is when in discussions I have with my artist friends, that almost to a man or woman, we none of us are really sure what we're doing, but we're really sure what we don't want to do. So, you go away from that.
You know, that almost seems like enough, right? I mean, that, like, if you got that down, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Hey, you know.
I just want to pick up on a slightly alter a question that Alan asked a moment ago about dishing on Monet. How's your buddy Sting?
He's doing great. He's
so tell us how this collaboration came together. So you did a painting for him, right?
Uh-huh.
And then you somehow get involved in the Broadway show.
Well, what we got involved with was a book. And this, we actually were thinking about doing this before I did that painting years ago. And that came up around 2000 when they were going to open the Sage Gateshead, which is this remarkable Norman Foster Performing Arts Center in Newcastle.
Right.
And they'd asked Sting to come and sing at the ribbon cutting. And we were in Newcastle. This is before any ground had been broken and stuff. And he's going, what do you think? Is there a painting there? You know, can we come up with a painting? I went, geez, I don't know. Let me think about it. My first idea was a 90-foot painting that we'd unfurl down the outside of the building at the ribbon cutting. Of course, it never occurred to me that Norman Foster would be less than pleased with a giant tarp being thrown
covering
over
his building,
his gleaming building. But the more research I did, the more this history was there. And we've pretty much been playing off of that history. And this book is a series of woodcuts, the first woodcuts I've done since I was working with Leonard Baskin back in the 70s, and they're printed by the Gravity Press that I looked all over North America to find the printer I wanted, and she was 150 feet from my studio. I mean, it's really a remarkable story. But the pieces are coming out great. We picked and Sting picked a number of songs that tells this story of the river and the city built around the river and how this city comes back from the industrial age.
And it's personal to him, obviously.
Very much a personal story. And the musical was just a small snippet of that.
Yeah.
John Logan wrote a terrific book, and since he's been in the cast, they've done great. But he is already committed to go on the road with Paul Simon, which is the second half of this tour that's already started. And so he can't put that off. So he's going to go to Australia.
It's a great show. Monet Kelly is on display at the Clark through February 15th. To learn more and to find out how you can visit this amazing exhibit, clarkart.edu. clarkart.edu. David Breslin is Associate Director of the Research and Academic Program and Associate Curator of Contemporary Projects at the Clark Art Institute, at least for a little while. I wish you well in your new horizons.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being with us. It's wonderful to have you here. Stephen Hanek, thank you very much for hanging out and for being in the next room and letting me harangue you to come in here. I appreciate
it. Always a pleasure, Joe.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.